Okay, Erev Tov, good evening, Shavua Tov to everybody. It should be a good week, a healthy week, a happy week, a holy week for all of us. I want to thank you for being with me late this evening on a critically important topic for all of us. If you are alive and living in a bias, you're craving and seeking shalom bias. My wife spent the last hour speaking with wives, and I have the privilege to speak to you this evening. I don't know if you're corresponding husbands of those wives, but it is good to be together, and it's such an important topic for all of us all throughout the year, but particularly in a time of crisis when living under a real sense of a pressure cooker. So a lot of what we said was coordinated will overlap, but a lot of it is also very different and tapered, obviously, for wives, for husbands, and different ideas. But I'll start out with the same joke. We all know the famous joke when it comes to shalom bias, that men and women have very different versions of shalom bias. A woman's version is, if you want shalom, you're going to have to buy it. You're going to go shopping. And for many men, their version of shalom bias is shalom bias. Peace in the home comes because I'm going to work. I'm out of here. I'm going to the Beis Medrash. I'm going lahavdil to the golf course. But it's an interesting thing because that word shalom means goodbye. The word shalom also means hello. And in this coronavirus of social distancing, in this period of quarantining, the shalom bias is not the shalom of goodbye to the home, but it's the shalom of hello to the home. And it is a incessant, perpetual, it is a never-ending hello to the home because there is nowhere else for us to go. That's not necessarily the way the world was designed. It's not necessarily the way the world, the family structure, is meant to be, particularly masculinity for men. We have a certain drive, ambition, aspiration. We are providers. We're hunters. We go out. And to be constrained and restricted to our home, to be transferred to another role. Some people are not currently working, and they can't have the satisfaction of feeling like the breadwinner, the provider. And not only that taken away from us, many have been recruited to the role of homeschooling, of teacher, have expressing some of their own feminine qualities and interaction with the children and doing dishes, preparing dinner, sharing the chores at home. It is a time in which people have left a lot of their comfort zone. Some of the paradigms that we're used to, whether you're a traditionalist or not, are upside down. The shalom bias is not the goodbye to the home, it is the never-ending hello to the home. And for many, that is putting a pressure cooker. It's hard. It's awkward. We're out of our routine and out of our comfort zone. And sometimes when we're stressed and sometimes when we're bothered, we take it out on the people that we're closest to. We take it out on the people that we feel the most comfortable with. We take it out on the people we love the most. And among those, maybe towards the top of those, there's nobody more than our spouse, nobody more than our wife. This is a critically important time. Psychologists, sociologists, they're all telling us now that when we are in a time of crisis, quarantine, restricted to our homes, we can either grow together or we're going to grow apart. The likelihood is that the average married couple is not going to remain the same. We'll either walk out having gotten closer, spent more time, spirit of compromise, negotiation, navigation, partnership, or we're going to grow apart, having different ideas about how to deal with this, having different respect for each other's boundaries and spaces, having a different level of contribution to being able to get through it. And realize that what we're going through is not just about the here and now. It's not just about surviving the crisis in the moment, but what we're going through is creating essentially memories for a lifetime. We will look back in our marriage at the milestones of our anniversaries, and we will remember COVID-19, coronavirus, Pesach 2020, and beyond. And those memories will either be wonderful ones, where we laughed and we giggled and we worried and we feared and we cleaned and we cooked and we did everything together, or they will be horrific memories. Do you remember when we were on the border of a divorce? Do you remember when we were on the brink of separating because we couldn't take it? And that's why our topic tonight, shalom bias, when you can't leave your bias, is so important. This is an area that takes chizuk. It requires recommitment regularly in the best of circumstances, but it certainly does in these circumstances, because if we take our eye off the ball, if you take our foot off the gas, if we step back and either concede or forfeit or submit and give up our responsibility towards this area, it can have ramifications that last a lot longer than even this quarantine. The Ramchal writes, beginning of Mesilas Yesharim, he says, you know, I've written nothing new, nothing novel in this book. I'm simply combining things we all know. But the more we all know it, the more we tend to take it for granted, and therefore the more we need to review. The Ramchal writes something no author ever has introduced their book with before, because why would anyone buy that book? Who begins a book by saying, I'm not writing anything new? He says, the only reason to buy this book is if you will keep rereading it, and similarly, many of the principles and ideas that we're going to share this evening, they're not new, they're not novel, we know them. We know them, but we need to be reminded of them. So how can we maintain our marriages, not only maintain them, how can we elevate them and enrich them? How can we look back and say, what a pivotal point where our relationship only got stronger? Our Parsha Acharei Mos tells us a very interesting pasuk. V'hikriv Aaron is parachatas asher lo, v'chiper ba'ado u'ba'ad beso. That Aaron, who is the Kohen Gadol, the Kohanim who do the service of Yom Kippur, were designated to achieve kapara. They were the ones who performed the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, later the Beis HaMikdash, and they achieved a level of atonement. And our commentators, the Gemara Chazal himself, note, it says, Ba'ado uva'ad beso, and in our Yom Kippur liturgy, which is not that far away, and hopefully we will be together to recite it, concludes, Ba'ado va'ad beso uva'ad ha'am. Why is it in that order? Ba'ad ha'am, when he receives atonement on behalf of the whole people, the whole nation, that includes his family. His family includes him. So isn't it repetitive, isn't it redundant to say, Ba'ado va'ad beso ba'ad ha'am? And they encourage us to understand, many commentators, that we see here a formula of responsibility, of taking extreme ownership. And Chevra, men, that is my message to you tonight. We've done a series over the years called Man Up. And this is a time, perhaps more than any other in my memory, that we need to man up. We're not victims. We can't point a finger. We can't pass the buck. We can't blame. It's a time for us to man up and step up and to be the men that our wives, that our children deserve and that they need, to keep the mentality, the attitude, the perspective, to behave in the way that we're meant to behave, to help in the way that we're meant to help. That doesn't mean it's all on us. Believe me, my wife spoke to the women last hour and there's a message for wives and for women. But we, the men, have to stand up. Aaron was told that you don't begin by pointing a finger. Atonement doesn't start by seeing what's wrong in everyone around you. Ba'ado, the first thing you have to do is look in the mirror and say, how do I need to improve? How can I take extreme ownership? What's my responsibility? What is my role in the environment and the energy and the climate that has been created, the atmosphere within my home? And only when I feel that I've perfected myself, when I've become a role model for others, then ba'ad beso, then I can step up for my family. And after ba'ad beso, ba'ad kol ha'am, then I can hope to have an impact on others. The Gemara Baba Metzia Kuf Zayin tells us, first examine yourself and then examine others. And Rav Hirsch says that word kshot is like from Brich Shmei, the Oraisa kshot. Kshot means truth. Be honest and true about yourself. So you know, we look around the people we're living with and we're not necessarily seeing them at their best. They're not necessarily as dressed up as we hope they'll be, as patient or as kind, as understanding as we want them to be. But you know what? Look in the mirror, my friends. How perfect are you? We're imperfect and we can't expect the people around us to be perfect. It's a time for us, ba'ado, step up and man up and be the people we're meant to be. Not to point a finger, not to pass the blame, and not to come with a passive spectator mentality to what's happening in my home, the environment of my Shabbos table, the environment of my dinner table, the cleanliness in my home, the behavior and the conduct of the children, of what's taking up our time and its meaning. We have to step up and man up. Be appreciative of our spouses, of our children. You know, several men have commented to me that they normally don't understand. They come home from a long day's work. Sometimes they go to the Beis Medrash at night, the late Marav at night. They sit on four committees and five other efforts. And they come home and their wife says, I'm exhausted. They say, what are you so exhausted from? What'd you do? You got the kids to school, back from school, you supervise the homework, you put dinner on the table, and you're exhausted? Why am I energized and you're exhausted? Not that that's the absolute paradigm. Many women go to work, many men are at home. But in a traditional model, and for the most part, that is often a model. And men describe, what are you so tired from? You have no energy or effort to make in your relationship with me. You're so tired. And several men have commented to me that that now that they are at home, and now that they are maybe not equal, but also partners in many of those efforts and chores of the home, in much of the raising of the children, they're trying to balance everything, they realize and they see their wives as superwomen. They see their wives as heroes. They see their wives, they understand. It's a miracle and amazing they have any energy at the end of the day when many men fail to have any, having gone through this. So this is a critically important topic to get through today and to forge the relationship for tomorrow, to create create the memories and to start the springboard that will hopefully launch our relationships to be even stronger. If we're not satisfied with our Shabbos and Yontif meals, with the atmosphere and the conversation, we have to take extreme ownership. What preparation have we made? How are we driving the conversation? Did we take the time to prepare a Dvar Torah? Do we have thought-provoking conversations and questions? Are we taking an interest with others? What effort and what preparation have we done? In Kedusha B'li Hachana, there is no holiness without effort and without preparation. Preparation in our bedroom, preparation at our dining room table, preparation in our home. There is so much here that is up to us. So I want to go through several areas that we can all be working on. Each one deserves a full treatment on Shalom Bayis. I once did a four-part series about my favorite marriage expert, Dr. John Gottman, using Torah sources. You can find it online if you want to hear. We don't have time to elaborate on each point, but just to hit the nuggets and apply these points of a healthy marriage specifically to this time of quarantine, of COVID-19, of being together. Number one, the role of healthy communication. You see, we take that for granted, and we assume and presume that people are talking to each other and they're expressing how they're dealing, what the challenges, what the obstacles, how they're being made to feel, what needs to adjust, what needs to change. But you know, there's often a real breakdown in communication in marriage. Maybe more from the man's side, even from a woman's side. Men struggle to be in touch with their emotion, to communicate, to articulate, to be able to listen empathically, actively to others. But this is critically important to being able to not only survive, but thrive during this time, to have a healthy sense of communication, to share with one another, this is how I'm experiencing it. Here's what's hard for me. Maybe you don't relate to. Do you know that I go to shul every day, or the routine that I have in the Beis Medrash, or going to work, what that does for me? And that having been robbed and snatched from me very suddenly and seemingly overnight. So some people, they're creatures of routine and of habit, and that being taken away has absolutely, it's like a kryptonite. But have we communicated what that is and how that feels? Have wives communicated to us what it means to be under the same roof all the time, the whole time, and what that means? If we don't stop and not take things for granted, communicate and articulate and not listen with judgment, and not listen ready to offer a solution, listening to validate. Really, that's how you feel. I didn't see it that way. I never understood it. I didn't begin to appreciate it. And thank you for listening to me and not offering a solution, but just validating and understanding what's been hard for me. What are the boundaries? How do we create personal space? How our work, many men are working from home. We're used to going out, having an office, having peers and colleagues. And now we're trying to, in the same space which was our living space until now, also be our working space. So how do we express our personal needs? How do we balance personal time with family time? What are fair expectations to have with one another? How do we allocate space and boundaries for it? What are our unique triggers for one another? Because we each have triggers. We have triggers the way children behave. We have triggers that we bring out from one another. I know that on this wonderful Zoom meeting, and I thank so many of you for being with us tonight. There are people who are empty nesters, married couples. There are newlywed. There are those with many children at our home. There are those with young children at our home. I know we don't all fit into one box, but each of us have different triggers which cause us to increase our stress and lose our cool and struggle with our equilibrium and bring out the negative and the pessimistic and the depressed emotions within us. So we need to communicate. We need to communicate our needs, our expectations. We need to communicate our triggers. We have to understand and validate one another and not take any of that for granted. We can be 4 or 6 weeks into this, and a couple who've been together 24/7 haven't actually pressed the pause button to say, you know, how are you feeling? How are you getting through this? How do you feel about it? What do you need from me? Make that time. It's critically important. Don't take it for granted. In that communication is not only the negative, what's going wrong, but we need to emphasize an extra effort in the communication about what's going right. Complimenting one another, catching each other, doing things that are right, that maybe in other circumstances would have taken for granted. Okay, so you put your bowl in the sink, you put your laundry in the laundry bin. Thank you for serving me dinner and making the extra effort to cook it. Thank you for getting dressed up. Thank you for homeschooling our children and taking that burden off me. I know it takes extraordinary patience on your part, but offering those compliments and that feedback, elevating a person, making them feel not invisible, but making them feel recognized for each thing that we do goes an enormous way. How do we do that? So within the area of communication, and again, each of these deserves really an elaborate, much more expansive treatment. But in the area of communication, one is communicating love. So we don't communicate love in a one-size-fits-all. We don't communicate love the same way. We have, in fact, Chapman famously described in his wonderful book, The Five Love Languages. And if we don't understand the love language our spouse speaks, if they don't understand the love language that we need, then we might think we're actually communicating love to one another, but it's not registering. We're not understanding it. We don't speak that language. If you're telling me the most affectionate and loving and romantic things, but you're doing it in Japanese, and I don't speak Japanese, I appreciate the effort, but it doesn't really make me feel loved. And so understanding one another's love language creates the vocabulary to actually communicate and land the message that we're trying to get across. So very quickly, the five love languages. Many maybe haven't even considered what your own love language is, let alone familiarity with your spouse's love language to know how to communicate. Words of affirmation, verbal compliments, express your love and appreciation. For some, they thrive and know they're loved by being recognized by another, by giving those compliments. You look so pretty. Did you lose some weight? Dinner is delicious. I love that insight that you offered. I'm so impressed by your patience with the children. Number two is acts of service, an act that eases the burden of responsibility. You know, you pitched in. I didn't even ask you to. You got up on your own. I can't thank you enough. You know, you did that thing for me. It had such a positive impact. Thank you so much. That act of service means everything to me, or to do the act of service for the other. Some of our wives, they don't need us to say, you're beautiful, you're amazing, your dinner's delicious. They want to see you do the dishes. They want to see you bathe the kids. They want to see you say, take time for yourself. Go enjoy a long bath or a conversation with your friend, and I'm going to put the kids to bed tonight. That is an act of service. A third area or language of communication is quality time. Some don't need the compliment. They don't even need the dishes done. They just want you to make time. And for men, who has time? From when we wake up till we fall asleep, we're trying to make a living. We're trying to figure out how we're going to pay the bills during this time. We're trying to make sense of the news and everything that's going on. We're trying to balance it with our own learning or personal growth and our children. And by the time the day is over, there's no time left even for the people that we claim to care about the most. For some, the love language is knowing that time was allocated, that time matters, and time without electronics. I struggle with this. It's an area I'm working on. But to spend that time and for the love language to be the most romantic, the most affectionate, for the language to scream the loudest is not only to allocate the time, but a time where you're fully there. Everyone knows one of my favorite Divrei Torah, when Hashem calls Moshe on top of the mountain and he says, "Ale elai ha-hara ve-heyei sham," climb the mountain and be there. What do you mean, be there? If he's on top of the mountain, where else would he be? Many Hasidic Rebbe say what God was telling Moshe is, I know there are many distractions waiting for you on the bottom of the mountain. You have so many things that you need to do, but when you're on that mountain, be with me. Turn off your phone, Moshe. Turn off your alerts. Turn off the vibration. Turn off the ding. I want you to fully be with me. And that third love language of quality time is not only being together, giving the time, even in the circumstances where no one has time, but it's a time which is focused, a time which they're not competing, a time which lacks distractions. Number four is giving gifts. A love language is the ability to give gifts to one another. So you say, who could give gifts? You can't go out. How do you give gifts? Neiman Marcus Nordstrom, one of them was declaring bankruptcy. Where are the gifts coming from? Who has the money to buy the gifts? So I have to tell you, an amazing idea. Go on Amazon tonight, because Amazon, you can still get gifts. You can still get almost anything, maybe not toilet paper, but almost any. But that's not the gift you should be getting anyway. And you can go on Amazon and get a little tchotchke, a little nothing, something from a date that you used to go on. If you're married 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, something reminiscent of a major vacation, a major milestone, a cute thing, a play, a t-shirt, a mug that has some affectionate language on it. Imagine that delivery comes, and you know why you bought that gift? Not a birthday, not an anniversary. Not Mother's Day, but make a note, it's coming up. You gave it why? Stam, because I love you. And I want you to know how much I appreciate you. And I want you to know that there's no one on the earth that I'd rather be quarantined with than you. That should be the mug. I'm copywriting it right now. There's no one on earth I'd rather be quarantined with. It's got to be a tall mug than you. And number four is physical touch and physical affection. Now, we know that men and women are constructed very differently in this area. But that, Sigmund Freud was not wrong. He, after all, had a Yiddish neshama. Not wrong in understanding, just like Chazal did. Hinei tov, tov ma'od is the Yetzer Hara is tov ma'od. We know that the sexual drive within man, the sexuality of the world that we live in, it's what makes the world go around in so many ways. There wouldn't be a continuity of the human species without it. But that's not the love language of physical touch that Chapman's talking about. He's talking about an affectionate physical touch that's not necessarily sexual or have intimacy in nature. It's affection. It's a pat on the back or on the shoulder or holding a hand or a touch or a hug in an appropriate venue in the appropriate circumstance. Why? Stam. not hoping it leads to anything more than telling you right now, I want to feel connected. I want to exchange energy. I want to feel that affection. So if we're talking about communication, then we need to know that we communicate not only with our words, but we communicate love in five different languages. And you have to know what language your spouse speaks. Otherwise, it's Japanese. They have to know what love language you speak. Otherwise, they may be speaking their love language. They mean well, and we appreciate the effort, but it doesn't have the impact that we're hoping for or the impact that we're craving. So area number one is communication. Don't take for granted the other person understands what you're going through. And make space to listen to the other. Active listening. Not listening where you're just buying time till you respond. Not listening where you're going to offer your solution. Listening where you validate. I hear what you're saying. That must be so hard. I'm watching. I never thought about it. That's such an interesting perspective. Understanding one another's triggers. Giving compliments. Understanding that love language. Part of communication is also knowing how to resolve conflict. Conflict is inevitable because human beings are different. We are designed differently. Chazal tell us there's a bracha that you make when you see a myriad of people. Imra harbe ochloson shel bnei adam omer, baruch ata Hashem elokeinu melech haolam, chacham harazim. We make a bracha that God is the wise keeper of secrets. If there's an enormous group of people in one place, ironically something we're incapable of doing right now. Why? Kishem she'ein partzufos sayim domim zelazeh, kach ein daitan shavin zelazeh, ela kol echad ve'echad yesh lo deya b'fnei atzmo. Everyone has their own opinion, perspective, background. We are each created differently. And certainly men and women, Mars and Venus, we are designed differently. We have different operating systems. We not only have different hardware, we have different software. And the same way we acknowledge we have different biological hardware, equally true is we have different metaphysical software. We are designed differently. And so we should anticipate that if we're designed differently, we're going to experience differently. We're going to crave differently. We're going to have needs differently. We're going to have different approaches, perspectives, or strategies of how to deal with things. And therefore, inevitably and invariably, conflict is going to arise. Dr. Gottman, the great marriage expert, says that in every fight that a couple has, there was a conversation that needed to happen that didn't happen. Every fight a couple has, there was a conversation that needed to happen that didn't happen. Don't have the fight. Have the conversation. He encourages what he calls a soft startup. A soft startup is, why did you do that? I can't believe you didn't. You're just like your mother. You always this. You always ruin. A soft startup is the way a conversation begins determines the way it's going to end. So you're bringing up a challenging or a difficult subject. Start from a space that's loving and that's open. Use a productive, non-judgmental, non-accusatory tone with an I rather than a you. You know, I feel when I ask you or I'm talking to you and you seem distracted, it makes me feel like I'm not that important. I know I am important to you. I know you care about me. But when I'm trying to talk and you seem distracted, I rather than you, soft startup rather than a harsh startup, with the goal of resolving a conversation that needs to happen rather than a fight that is escalating. So number one is communication. Don't take for granted. Communicate using the right love language. Have a conversation about a love language. Understand one another's triggers. And when there are differences, reconcile them. Be able to come to a fruitful and a beneficial outcome, to understand the other person better, to come to a compromise or to come to a solution which will work for both, because kishem, just like our faces and our DNA are different, so too, just like our hardware is different, our software is different, the more we understand one another, the better we can be. And when you have that fight, when you have that blow up, when you lose that cool, which is inevitable and is definitely going to happen, it happens to everybody, let it go quickly. You're a man. Take extreme ownership. Man up and be mevater. You don't have to have the last word. And you don't have to be right. And you don't have to stand on ceremony. And you don't have to make her come back and apologize. Let it go. Let it go. The longer you hold on to it, the heavier it becomes. The longer you hold on to it, the more difficult it is to unwind and unravel. Let it go. Be a mevater. Chazal are filled with insight of the bracha. That the person, you felt you were insulted, you were degraded, you were looked down on, let it go. Let it go. Because, you know, we all have our best moments and not our best moments. And we, too, are hopeful that the people around us will let things go. So even when it escalates, and even when there is that fight or that blow up, don't hold on to it. Reconcile, move on, let it go at an even faster pace than normal. And if you're struggling to do that, if that's hard for you, let me give you a little strategy. I want you to picture that, God forbid, in the middle of that fight, God forbid a million times over, that God forbid in the middle of that fight, the person you love were diagnosed with coronavirus and had to go into a hospital on a ventilator where you couldn't even visit them or be with them. Is whatever you're fighting about, would it matter then? It just doesn't matter. It's not important. That doesn't mean that there aren't important things in life. We should communicate about them. We should resolve them. We should strategize. We should compromise. We should figure out a solution together. But the thing that we're so fighting, that we're standing on ceremony, that we can't even talk and we can't even look at it, and we refuse to be the first, and you have to come to me, and what? And the silent treatment, it just doesn't matter. Look around the world we're living in, the obituaries, the death notices, the great men and women that we're losing. Look at the pain and the suffering, whatever that fight is about. It just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Communicate, listen, say thank you for telling me, validate. Number one is communication. Number two is this koach of mevater. Give the benefit of the doubt, be flexible, let things go. Everyone goes through things in their own way. Make this space for the other to go through it in their way. Maybe you need to, you're an extrovert. You need to constantly be talking on the phone, FaceTiming, or Zooming, or connecting with other people. It's how you're surviving. But maybe the other person is an introvert. They need space, they need time, they need a few minutes by themselves. In this environment where we are on top of each other 24/7, all they crave and all they need is to come up for a little oxygen by being alone. Maybe they are the extrovert and you're the introvert. We all come from different places, kesheim. So therefore, carve that space and create that margin for the other person to experience what we're going through in their way. And talk it out. What does that look like and what does that mean? Be nosei ba'olam chavero with the other. We have an entire chazal tell us that one of the ways that Torah is acquired is having that capacity to feel empathy for another. Don't just focus on your hardship. I can't do this. I can't bear this. This is impossible. Look what's fallen on my plate. Look what's on the other person's plate. And look and feel with a sense of empathy. Feel for what they're going through. Understand through their shoes what they're going through. And therefore, be much more hesitant to jump down someone's throat or to let something bother you. Don't let it linger. Make space for each to experience it in their own way. Gottman has a concept that he calls positive sentiment override or negative sentiment override. You may remember this from early on in your courtship, in your dating, or in your marriage. Positive sentiment override is when you're so in love and you're so in lust and you're just learning about the other person, and positive sentiment override, they could do no wrong. And the bad habits and the quirky behavior, those are just idiosyncrasies. They're adorable. They're so cute. And everything is just so perfect because positive sentiment override. We put on our pair of glasses where the person whom we're falling in love with can do no wrong. And relationships sometimes hit a wall, Gottman says, where we all of a sudden transition to negative sentiment override. You know what negative sentiment override is? That the person wakes up in the morning and says, good morning. You say, good morning? What's good about this? And what makes it morning? It's still the night. And I had the worst sleep and you're a miserable person. And when the person can do no right, when they're wrong, even before they open their mouth first thing in the morning, that's negative sentiment override. In general, he talks about the strategy of how to achieve a positive sentiment override. But now more than ever, make the effort, be mindful intentionally to have a positive sentiment override. When you're feeling that negative thought, override it with positive thoughts. Remember how you fell in love and why you got here in the home. See the blessing, see the opportunity, see the enormous bracha that is around you. Number three. And these are corollaries of communication. Boundary setting. You need to know your boundaries and you need to understand your spouse's boundaries. So what are some examples of boundaries that are important to lay out? This is very practical. Maintain different schedules during the week and on the weekends. Now Shabbos presents its own schedule by definition. But how is Sunday different than Monday? I've had many conversations, one as recent as an hour ago, where people have no idea what day. Actually, I had two conversations like this today. People had no idea what day of the week it is. Because for us, days are blending one into another. What is differentiating these days? When there's no shul, I mean, long tachanun, short tachanun, now we're back to knowing tachanun. But what's differentiating our days? People don't even know where they are on the calendar, where they are on days. So there are certain boundaries. We should know what a weekday looks like from a Sunday, from a Shabbos, and so on. Presents a sense of normalcy, a sense of routine. Collaborate around it. Design it. Come up with a shared calendar that you talk about. So you say, my calendar's empty. What do I have to do? What needs to be on my calendar? It's not true. Schedule the things that matter with the children, with one another. Schedule personal private space. Schedule combined space. Schedule space to learn in a shir together. Schedule the time that you're going to daven. Schedule when the meals will be. The more we have a routine, the more we have a sense of normalcy, the more we can behave with a sense of normalcy. What about boundaries within the physical space of our home? Certain areas of the home should be work-only spaces, and certain areas should be work-free spaces, particularly those who are trying to work from home while balancing children, spouse. You know, if we walk into that space, which is a workspace, the other needs to respect it. It has to be a boundary. Just like they wouldn't barge in at work, we're in the middle of a conversation, a meeting, a conference call, or we're focusing on our work and we're trying to do it without distraction, so too there should be physical spaces designated within a home that are honored, that there's boundaries to them. And the opposite's also true. A bedroom should not be where the work is taken. A bedroom should not be a place necessarily where the shiur is listened to. The bedroom is not where the trouble is. The bedroom should not be a place that children have unfettered access to. There has to be private and holy space. There has to be space which is designated for a couple, which is sacrosanct and sacred. And so there has to be boundaries. What defines a workspace? What defines a private space? Schedules and checklists to help us manage expectations. We talked about we're going to alternate or rotate, or each one's going to contribute what they're good at. These are unusual times, and therefore the definitions and the expectations of what we're each contributing to this, instead of each be working with different assumptions and never having spoken about it, and therefore when each of those assumptions are not met, fights ensue. Have the conversation. Gottman talks about gridlock, the perpetual fights that we have, because rather than have the conversation for how to navigate them, we simply repeat the same fight over and over and over again. I think 67% of fights that we have are gridlock, perpetual gridlock. It's the same disagreement we have, but rather than resolve it or come up with a strategy on how to navigate it, we just keep revisiting the same fight over and over. So too here, in this unusual time, have that conversation. Here are the tasks. Here are the checklists. Here's what needs to be managed in the chores, vis-a-vis children, vis-a-vis the home, vis-a-vis ourselves. And therefore, how can we honor them, manage them with a sense of a boundary? There has to be a boundary when we're communicating with one another. You have to be able to say, I don't have the bandwidth to talk right now. I had an incredibly stressful experience or conversation or day, and I know you feel a need and your love language is for me to talk right now. I don't have the bandwidth. I want to honor that, but I need you to respect my boundary that right now that doesn't work for me. That's true for physical affection, intimacy. It's true for conversation, and it's true for all these areas. So one of the corollaries of communication that's critically important, particularly in this time, is boundary setting. Area number, I think, 4. And this was a great insight from my wife. She said, don't judge your marriage by corona. Our marriages and our lives to a degree right now are under a microscope. They are intensifying and broadening and magnifying everything. Hopefully the good we're seeing, also some of our own shortcomings and deficiencies, and the pressure cooker that we're living is putting everything under a magnifying glass, to the point that people have reached out to us saying, I can't take this when this is over. I want to get divorced. I understand in Wuhan, China, there was a spike in divorce when people were finally able to get out, having lived with one another 24/7 for not weeks, but months, and no other outlet. It can bring out the best. It can bring out the worst. But it's important to remember, this isn't the sum total of who we are. This is a finite blip on the screen, hopefully one that will end relatively soon, and that we should not extrapolate out to our whole marriage or our whole future or our whole destiny or what will be. This is a moment. And don't judge one another as by our worst in this moment, but by our best. The Mishnah in the second parak of Avos says, Haveidan l'chol ha'adam l'kaf schus. Judge the entire person favorably. And our commentators point out, it doesn't say judge another favorably, because why should you judge them favorably? Right now they just did something terrible. The answer is because you're judging kol ha'adam. Don't look at this one moment, the one thing they said, the one thing they did. Don't look at the one bad decision. Look at the kol ha'adam, the total picture of who the person is. And in the context of the total person of who the picture of who the person is, this is something negligible. Really, who they are is someone so much more. My wife, the mother of my children, the grandmother of my grandchildren, my life partner, my inspiration. We've been through so much. So yeah, that was a bad day. That was a bad decision. That was a bad comment. That was a bad move. Dan the kol ha'adam. See the whole person, not just that specific small little moment. Next, find time when there is no time. It's an amazing paradox we're living in. On the one hand, we have all the time in the world. We can't go anywhere, and many of the things that we had to do are now off our plate. And yet, as much as it seems like we have all the time in the world, we have no time. No time to do anything. It's a peculiar tension, a peculiar paradox we're living in. We are under one roof. Kids, responsibilities, chores, worries. How will we pay the bills? Will the income turn around? Will the economy turn around? What is the incoming news? Life gets so busy that we don't have time to connect. And we are failing to nurture and nourish the relationship that matters the most. And don't do it for your spouse. Do it for you. Everyone knows when you're on the airplane and they give you the safety instructions. Please God, we should see them again soon. We would love and crave to hear a great safety instruction presentation right now, if we could fly and go somewhere safely. So they always tell us that when the oxygen mask drops from the cabin, always put yours on first before you help another. We have responsibility to our children. We have responsibility to our work. We have responsibility to the world. But you know, if we don't take care of ourselves, then we can't take care of others. We have to take care of ourselves. Covey talks about one of the most important habits, sharpen the saw. You have to take care of yourself to be in a position to be able to help others. And how do we take care of ourselves? By making time. Time for ourselves, we'll talk about in a moment, but time with our spouse. Nurture and nourish that relationship. Carve that space and that margin to have those conversations, to have that experience. I want to tell you something that absolutely nourishes and nurtures me. It's literally like air, oxygen I breathe, is laughter. Laughter. There's a lot of research. Laughter is the best medicine. Chazal understood it, the importance of opening a shiur with milsa b'dichusa. You have to start with a joke. It lowers the temperature. It makes people more able to listen and to grow. We just saw it recently in Daf Yomi, the idea of introducing a lecture with a joke. Laughter is the great medicine. So find, listen, there's clean comedy that you can listen to or that you can watch. There are appropriate clean things that will make you laugh. Laugh out loud together. Giggle together. Laughter is the best medicine. So find time for serious conversation. Exchange ideas and catch each other up on the news and what you think will be. Have conversations about aspirations and ambitions and dreams. Have conversation about when this is over. Where do you want to travel and what yet do you want to do? Set big goals together and dream them together, and set small goals together, like cleaning the garage over the next week, or getting something done within the house, or something that's been taking so much time. Find that time, because time is the air, the oxygen that will nourish and nurture a relationship, and it's critical. Dating in marriage is critical, and dating in Corona is critical. And you can date even during Corona. Lock ourselves in that Kodesh HaKodashim called the bedroom. Go sit in that backyard. Go for that walk. Technology free, and date even within the context of a marriage. There are fun games that you can create online. Gottman has, and you can download and print them, called Love Maps, which are questions to ask one another. You could be married for 5 decades, 50 years. I don't know what mineral that is, what metal that is, but you could be married for 50 years and still be learning about one another. And that journey to learn towards one another is what draws you to one another. Invest in one another, buy gift for one another, spend time with one another. That's what nurtures and nourishes a relationship. The Rambam is an amazing comment. I haven't seen this inside, but I was told that the Rambam writes that the gold, 50 is gold. Thank you, my fact checker in all of my Zooms and in all of life. Shkoyach. The Rambam writes that the Hebrew term we have for a woman is an Isha. What's the Hebrew term for a married woman? Is an Isha. Why is there no other term? Why is it the same word, Isha, that describes a woman and a married woman? For a man, we have a different term. For the woman, it's the same term. And the Rambam apparently or supposedly writes, you know why? Listen to this carefully. A man should never feel, I finished courting my wife. I've landed her. I'm married to her. And now I can burp. And now I can leave my shirt untucked. And now I can fail to shower. And now I can lose my cool and explode and let her really see who I am. And now I can... No, she's an Isha. Even when she's married to you, she's like the single woman that you're trying to court. She's like the single woman that you're trying to impress. She's like that single woman that you were trying to land, marrying up, hoping that she would actually decide to spend the rest of her life with you. And so carve that time and bring that mentality and that attitude and nurture and nourish the relationship in that way, because one can never take it for granted. We are forever part of a courtship. We're still dating even after we are long married. And we need to still continue to endear ourselves on one another. You know, the Rashi writes, it says that the angels come by Yomrei Love, Ayei Sara Ishtecha, Yomrei Nei Ba'oa, where's your wife Sarah? Oh, she's in the tent. And Rashi says, according to the Gemara in Bab Metzia Pei Zayin, that when they came, they knew where she was. They're angels. God doesn't know where Sarah is. Of course he knows. She's got a GPS on everybody. By asking Avram, where's Sarah? Avram would say, oh, where is Sarah? Oh, she's in the tent. She's a modest, humble woman. My wife Sarah, she's really unbelievable. She's incredible. And Revolba writes in a Shirei Chumash on Parshas Vayera something amazing. How long were Avram and Sarah married? When the angels came, Avram and Sarah were married. They weren't 25 years old. They got married, I'm sorry, when they were 25 years old. How long were they married when the angels came? When he was 99, nearly 75 years What gold is that? Who can fill me in for that? What gold is 75? Avram and Sarah celebrated their 75th, nearly their 75th anniversary, and the angels were still trying to make sure that Avram... Is diamond? Is that true? 75. Their diamond anniversary to make sure that Avram was still a Chava V'Abayla. You have to be Chava V'Abayla? So empty nesters, listen carefully. I don't care how many years you're married or what anniversary you've celebrated. You've never arrived that you can take let your guard down. You still have to be sensitive and caring and loving and complimentary. You have to man up, and you still have to go, and you have to court, and you have to land that woman. She is an Isha. Even when she's married to you as your Isha, she is an Isha, as if she is still a single woman. So that doesn't mean we're never going to lose our cool. It doesn't mean we're ever going to not say something we regret. It doesn't mean we're ever going to not say something negative or have a negative interaction. But here's what the research shows, that a negative event, a negative conversation, a negative comment, like a partner rehashing an old fight, has three times the lasting impact of a comparable positive impact. So if I say, oh, remember that great thing we had? Yeah, that's nice. And then you forget. But if I say, remember how you treated me? Remember that fight? Remember what you did to me? Remember how you made me feel? Bringing up that negative experience has three times more of a negative impact, a lasting impact, a deeper impact. And so to keep love alive, you have to have a rough guideline in mind that research is called the rule of four. The rule of four is four good things are necessary to overcome one bad thing. For one bad comment, four compliments. For one bad memory, four positive memory. For one negative news, four positive pieces of news. There have to be four for everyone. Now, finding good things sometimes creates creativity in quarantine. You're not going out. You're not necessarily accomplishing. So here's something social psychologists call nostalgize. Nostalgize is a fascinating verb they coined. To nostalgize means to discover remarkable benefits of reliving the past. You see, one of the benefits of quarantining and being secluded to home is you're where all your albums are. You're where your memories are. You're where your shoebox filled with the old cards and letters that you've given yourself are. We did this, albeit not necessarily willingly at first, but we did this on Yontif. My wife went up in her closet and took down an old shoebox and found, and young people here will have no idea what I'm talking about. And frankly, what a terrible, terrible loss for you that you will not have actual paper letters and cards you will have given one another. You will have text messages and emails and WhatsApp voice notes that will be lost in the terabytes of information of time. And we still have, and we should be grateful for it, us old timers, that we still have shoeboxes filled with cards and information. You know, my wife kept and found, I have where I scribbled the original note when the person who set us up called me and I wrote her name and her address and what time I'm supposed to call her. And you know what it means to hold that and look at that? Our 23rd anniversary is coming up, and 23 years later to be reliving the list of where we went on our dates and to see some of the cards we gave one another and to look at our engagement album and our wedding album. So nostalgize this time. We're home. In order to create positive sentiments that override the negative ones, tap into those lovingly curated memories that you have that you can elevate, that will create positive and bonding experiences. You'll laugh together at things of the past. You'll remember. You'll laugh at the way you looked and the pictures of yourself in the past. Do the things that will bring you closer, not the ones that will tear you apart. And if there is something that tears you apart, make a conscientious effort to do four times more things that will bring you together. Next, self-care. Till now, we talked about carving space for the other and understanding they're experiencing it differently than you. But we also have to understand how we're experiencing it ourselves. Self-awareness. You know, the Maharal writes in Pirkei Avos, everything in Pirkei Avos, if it were Sesame Street, was brought to you by the number three. Three things the world exists on. Three things remove you from the world. Everything is three, three. Three shlosha dvarim, shlosha, shlosha, shlosha. So the Maharal writes, the shlosha correspond with the three relationships that we have in our lives. What are the three relationships? We have Ben Adam Lechavero, relationships with others. We have Ben Adam Lamakom, relationship with our Creator, with Hashem. But the third area is probably the most neglected and arguably is the most important. And that is the relationship Ben Adam Laatzmo, the relationship we have with ourselves. What kind of, are we comfortable in our own skin? Do we have a self-awareness of who we are, our strengths and our weaknesses, the impression that we leave on others? Do we know what makes us tick? Do we know what are our positive and our negative triggers? Do we understand what we need to self-soothe and to be able to come back with the best of ourselves? That Bein Adam La'atzmo is so important. This morning I had a Zoom with some of the singles of our community, and I talked about contrasting the two uses of the word bedidus, beis dalad dalad. On the one hand, last week's parsha, is Badad Yeshed Mechutz L'machan and Moshevo. The Metzora, the individual gossiped who made someone else feel so isolated and alone, part of their rehabilitation is to be isolated and alone. They need to know what that's like. Why? Because the Gemara says, among the Chashav Kames, among those who are dead even while they're alive, is the Metzora. Because when a person is isolated and alone, it's so painful. Loneliness is so unbearably painful. And that's why. The Jewish people know that. Hein am levadad yishkon. We dwell alone. The nations of the world, after 75 years from the Holocaust, they gave us a reprieve, the gift of Israel. Anti-Semitism is on the rise again, reminding us, hein am levadad yishkon. We are a nation that lives alone. So on the one hand, beis dalad dalad bedidus, loneliness can be unbearably painful. But on the other hand, we have an entire concept called hispodidus. Our greatest leaders began as shepherds. Why? Because God wanted them to know, be alone. Why was it so important for Avraham Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe Rabbeinu, so many others to experience to be a roe, Rabbi Akiva? Why did they have to be a roe, a shepherd? Because a shepherd is out there in the wilderness, in the desert, in the field, by themselves. There is no smartphone, there is no technology, there is no satellite. The shepherd is out there, just them and God, just them and themselves, harnessing that power of Ben Adam La'atzmo. So, my dear friends, what we need to be working on is Ben Adam L'Chavera, with our spouses, with our children, with everyone around us. This is a time of Ben Adam L'Malkum, our relationship with Hashem, but it's also a time of Ben Adam L'Atzmo. We need to understand ourselves. We need to understand what we need. We need to understand what makes us tick. And we need to invest and nourish ourselves and have the kind of communication and conversation that can allow and carve the space in order to be able to get that done. In order to get that done. Next is stay positive. Stay positive. And it's your responsibility. Man up. I know you feel the same level of worry and anxiety. I know so much rests on your shoulders as the primary, in most cases, breadwinner of the family, not knowing what will be to pay the bills. I know it's hard, but you know what? Man up. Stay positive. There's so much to be grateful for. Recognize and count literally the Mea Brachos B'chol Yom. Chazal instituted, Al Tikre Ma Ela Mea, not Ma Hashem Elokecha Sho'a Meimach, not what does God want from us, but Mea. He wants us to count 100 brachas a day. Why? He wants us to have a bid for connection with Hashem, to see Hashem 100 times a day, but more than that, 100 times a day, no matter what's going on, no matter how hard it is, stop and see the bracha. So our Mea Brachos that we're saying, we shouldn't be saying to ourselves. You know, the atmosphere in a home, man up, take extreme ownership. We are the anchor of a home. It's our responsibility. And therefore, make brachas out loud, literally and figuratively. You're having a glass of water, you're having a cup of coffee, you're sitting down to a meal. You don't normally, it's outside your comfort zone to make a bracha out loud. These aren't normal times. Let your spouse, let your children, let them see you and catch you counting your blessings on a regular basis. It's a time to emphasize the positivity, because positivity is absolutely contagious. On Shabbos HaGadol, I spoke about how the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, used to emphasize this. The word Daber and Davar, we create a reality of things by the language we use for it. And he talked, he was such an emphasis and a focus on positive language, because we create a reality with the language that we use. Harvard researchers have shown, Nicholas Christakis among them, that smiling is as contagious as yawning or sneezing. I know, if you're a teacher, you know that if someone yawns, there goes the whole room. Everyone's going to start yawning. One person sneezes, hopefully it's not coronavirus, there goes a string of contagious sneezes. Well, what they proved is the same is true with smiling. If one person smiles, it spreads virally in a positive sense, contagiously. So you don't understand, your children are so miserable, your fabisana spouse is so miserable, you just wish people around you were more positive and smiling. It's on you! It's up to you! You walk around, your face is a reshus harabim. Put a smile ear to ear, and it will be contagious. It will have an impact on others. We often mistakenly think, I have to wait to feel good, and then I'll smile. But scientifically, you know, if you smile, then you're going to feel good. When you smile, the muscles of your mouth release a dopamine, and you feel good. You're energized. You're happier. Put a smile on your face, and the whole world smiles with you. We have to have a positive language, a positive attitude. Ki b'simcha seitzeyun. With simcha, we get out of it. We're locked down, we're quarantined, we're distanced, the world's caving in. How do we get out? We want to teitzeyun, we want to get out. Ki b'simcha seitzeyun. With a sense of simcha, with a joy, with a smile. We have to be the rock and the anchor of emuna and bitachon and dveikus. Yes, I have theological questions. Why are such good people suffering so badly? How do we make sense of a force of nature leaving such a horrific and horrendous impact? I too share these questions. But now is not a time for questions in our home. Now is a time for us to be pillars and anchors of emuna and bitachon. to not ask where is Hashem, but to see Hashem in every blessing, the roof over our head, and the food in our mouths, and the air that we're breathing, and the good health that we have. He'emanti ki adaber. I have emunah because I speak about, and I mention Hashem's language. And here I want to put the onus on you, my dear fellow men. Man up. You see, I'm the rabbi of Boca Raton Synagogue. I'm a rabbi of Boca Raton Synagogue. But every one of you is the Mora D'Asra of your home. You are the Rav of your home. I don't care if you can barely read the Aleph Beis, or you have Smicha's Chaver, or you have Smicha from Rav Moshe Feinstein. You are the Mora D'Asra, and you are the Rav of your home. So the atmosphere of davening, it's the, what you're going to create. Whether you've turned your home into a Beis Medrash, it's up to the effort that you've invested. Are you finding the energy and strength to learn? Are you davening with greater focus and making brachos out loud? Is there an atmosphere of emuna and dveikus? Is there smiling? You're the Mora D'Asra. You're the Rav. You're the Rebbe in your home. Our children, our spouse, the impact is more by what we're modeling than anything that we are saying. We say in Shema, we teach our children, b'shivtecha b'veisecha v'lechtecha v'aderech. For many years, we had the opportunity for them to see the way we live our lives, b'lechtecha b'aderech, when we can leave our homes, but now they're watching so carefully how we're living, b'shivtecha b'veisecha, when we are permanently 24-7 sitting in our homes. Have we transformed our homes into a miniature Beis Medrash, into a miniature shul, into a miniature chesed factory and machine? Are we stepping up? You're the Mora D'Asra. You're the Rebbe. You're the Rav. Don't point a finger at another. And don't feel that you're a victim. And don't wait for someone else to do it. You are the number one contributor of your marriage. You're that husband who needs to court that wife and not take her for granted. Make her be your Isha. Treat her as she, that single woman you were trying to land. Now for newlyweds, someone sent me an anonymous email about newlyweds. This is Shana Rishona on steroids. This is Shana Rishona in high definition, literally, to be together. And that has an opportunity and bracha, and it has challenges. Everything we've talked about, creating personal space, private space, together space, a calendar, a task, chore list, coordination, expressing, communicating, expectations, all critically important. But empty nesters and newlyweds, the common denominator with no children at home, how can you fill this time? You can fill it by being playful. Play games together. Do a puzzle together. Learn together, laugh together, create a routine together, but most importantly, find meaning together. There are studies that show that we gain resiliency when we find meaning. Meaning can be in personal growth as we get through this. Meaning can be in the difference that we make. Meaning can be accomplishing projects that we've been kicking down the road. But have a conversation about what does it mean to find meaning? What is the meaning we're looking for? How can we achieve it? How can we make that difference? Physical affection. Physical affection. Healthy marriages need affection. And men naturally need that more than women. Men crave that physical touch. Men crave a physical connection. Men crave a physical release. But we understand, and now is not the time, we've elaborated in the past and Man Up, that men and women, again, different hardware, different software, and different startup software about what gets the software going and the hardware going on the machine. And that's enough with the metaphors and analogies. But we know that it takes different things. And what may make a man in the mood is not the same thing. The best contribution you can make to have your spouse be in the mood is bath time, the dishes, homework time, listening, communication, understanding the love language. Don't think you're going to have a crazy day of yelling and screaming, of failing to contribute or to pitch in, of to do your part, of losing your cool, of having expectations and demands, and show up in the bedroom and somebody's going to want to be intimate and affectionate and loving and romantic with you. All day is the foreplay. All day is the advance and the contribution that sets the tone for what's going to come later. So be understanding, these are unusual, difficult times, and if your spouse is not on the same schedule as you in this area, be more flexible, be more understanding. Help communicate again. Communicate your needs. Communicate this as an outlet. Communicate it as a stress reducer. Communicate it as something that will bring you closer and make you feel a bond, and perhaps as your love language. Communication, communication, communication. As a rabbi, I've counseled countless cases, and I've seen disasters that could have been averted and avoided if people had only communicated the needs, their challenges, and had been able to jointly and in partnership navigate that together. It is critically important. For us men, it's an area which is very important, and therefore we need to communicate that. I once spoke to a therapist I have great admiration for, who's also a Talmud Chacham, a Musmach, a Rav. And I said to him, what happens when a man is in a marriage where his schedule, his needs are not the same as his wife. His wife doesn't want to be as intimate on the same schedule or frequency as he does. And the man is suffering and struggling as a result and may act out in ways that are harmful for his neshama and harmful for that marriage. And they've tried to communicate and he's tried to learn what brings her pleasure, what are her needs, how can he be more affectionate, what does he need to better understand. And even when that is all said and done, he said sometimes a man needs to tell his wife that just as she's engaged and involved in chesed in areas around her, with her children, with friends, with others, this can be a chesed she can do, not against her will, God forbid, not something which is inappropriate. But sometimes a willingness, when I'm not in the mood to talk, but I'll stay up and talk because it's your love language, and you may not be in the mood to be affectionate, but it's my love language. So much can be accomplished with communication. It's critically important. And in this area, I want to just give one important point. The area of the mikvah is a very complicated area today. Our mikvah, like most communities, remains open with enormous guidelines and precautions which are being taken. Not now the time to review, including extra treatment of the water and the scheduling of women and preparing at home and showering immediately after at home. And I personally think we're making every effort with the advice and the guidelines of experts and would have no hesitancy for a woman to use the mikvah. And yet, understandably, there are women who are scared, who are nervous, who aren't comfortable for themselves or because in their home there are children or others who are at risk and they don't want to take even something which is a small risk. We need to be understanding. We need to be flexible. And even though it's an area that is extraordinarily hard for us to be, we need to show that flexibility, that understanding, because that communication of love is something which will be so lasting. It's something which is so important. To wrap up, we're towards the end. Man up. That's been our theme consistent throughout. Be that rabbi, be that Mora D'Asra, be that Rav, be that husband. Take that extreme ownership. If we, ba'ado, ba'ad beso, ba'ad ha'am, we have to improve ourselves. Order that gift. Learn the five language. Give compliments. Say thank you. Don't take for granted. Well, I work hard to earn the money, so I have to thank her for making dinner. That's her job. Yeah, thank her for making dinner. Thank her that the laundry's done, the bed is made, your children are being raised. Thank her for her intellectual contributions, the sophisticated way that she helps you become a better person. Be kind to one another. Be loyal to one another. And man up. Make an effort. I know that you're home and you haven't left the home in 6 weeks, but it's enough with that same pair of sweatpants, that shirt. The ring around that collar is disgusting. Don't put it in the laundry or the dry cleaner. Throw it in the garbage. When's the last time that you've Sfira Saomer? You can't necessarily shave regularly. But our hygiene, make that effort. I don't care that you're not going to a business meeting. I don't care that you're not interacting with friends. I don't care that you're not going to shul. The most important person in your life that you need to impress the most lives under your roof and sleeps a couple feet away from you. Man up. And man up and care about how you look and the impression you make and land that woman, court her as if she's not yet your wife. And I'll conclude with this. Also in our parsha, the pasuk tells us, Hashem spoke to Moshe and he tells him, Daber al Aaron, tell Aaron, your brother, lo yavo b'chol eis ala kodesh. You cannot enter the sanctuary at any time or at will. And Rashi tells us why. The reason Aaron couldn't enter at will is because the divine presence Hashem lives there. So what? Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, if anyone should feel comfortable, if anyone should be able to enter casually, wouldn't it be Aaron? Aaron is the holiest. He's the Kohen Gadol. Shouldn't he be able to enter the Holy of Holies? Chaim Shmulevitz, Zatzal, explains so beautifully. He says, you know what the number one enemy of holiness is? Familiarity. Even the saintly Aaron HaKohen, who purified himself for 7 days before he entered the Holy of Holies, even Aaron HaKohen, the great Tzaddik, even an Aaron HaKohen was in danger of falling prey to that sense of familiarity. Familiarity is the enemy of holiness. The commentary, the Chassid Yaivitz, explains the rationale that the Ole Regel, those who came to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, had to exit a different gate each time they entered. Why a different gate? So the Yaivitz writes, so they don't begin to compare the doorway, the ornamentation of the Beis HaMikdash with their own homes, to not lose that sense of awe, to never become too familiar. Familiarity breeds contempt. And therefore the Torah tells us we need moments of separation and reflection in order to appreciate our gifts, to overcome that temptation towards familiarity. We are in an intense period of familiarity. We are on top of one another, around one another, overly familiar with one another. This is the time that despite the familiarity, to nevertheless reach and stretch for that holiness. Do what we need to do to be the men we need to be, the leaders within our home, to be the version of ourselves our wives deserve, our children deserve, the versions that we deserve. Because the shalom in our homes, the shalom bayis, is up to us. We set that tone. And therefore, I want to thank you all for tuning in this evening. And in the merit of our efforts, may our homes be filled only with good health. May they be filled with happiness. May they be filled with a shalom bayis, that we're always more excited to say hello to the bayis than we ever are to say goodbye. Thank you so much.